So, listeners, at this point, it is worth noting that our character, Sirius, has turned up in what amounts to a fat suit, a pinstripe jacket, a hat, and is now brandishing a fat cigar. This is all colour coordinated in a kind of a dark charcoal or black, and he has got rid of his bow tie, as I'm guessing it was cramping his style. This is typical. It's rare that we get an RPG session without some element of cosplay.
Hello, I'm Colin Green, and you are listening to Spike Pit.
Right, mate, so whilst you trough your scrambled eggs, let's have a look at these Year Zero characters. So you've created Sirius. He's an animal type dog, and he's a seer, and he's elderly. So that's, so we're going to give him a spin out today. Then you, so Diz has created an orangutan.
Has he got a name yet?
Einstein 12, you're Sirius 40. So these, if you remember, these are naming conventions from the setting. In Paradise Valley, remember it's Paradise Valley, yeah?
Yeah.
So you are the dog, dog tribe, he's the ape tribe. Then we've got a moose. Another one of Dizzy's, this is a warrior. Oh yeah, the orangutan was a seer. The moose, a warrior, so they're a kind of, they don't hang out in tribes, the mooses, they're the odd one out, they're loners. Don't know too much about them, they're quite mysterious in the setting. Then we've got a bear called Brosnan, and she's a healer, which is a really interesting character actually. She wanted to play a therapist. Who's Gretzky 08, the animal badger?
That's Ricky.
That's DM Ricky. So he's a scavenger. Then we've got an ape from the ape clan, Tyson 33. That's got to be you. And Tyson, I'm imagining, is a warrior.
Yep.
And he's got a weapon maker talent. Is that weapon maker or weapon master?
Master.
And he's huge, and he's got the jumper animal power. Then we've got a rat clan, squirrel called Shaw 13, scavenger. Who's that? Is that Ricky? No, that's you as well.
No, yeah, I don't understand. I don't remember my name.
Shaw. Shore. Shaw 13.
I've got a name, which I have no idea about.
Alright, then we've got a cat, a gripper, nine. There's a hunter, Ricky. Now, we had suggested that we'd quite like Daisy to make up a rabbit, didn't we? Do you remember what role? Was it like a hunter?
I don't know, we already have two hunters, but we don't have hunters. We don't have a trappy fella, but I don't think
a trapper.
I'm not that bothered about it.
What role is the trapper though? Still under the hunter?
I think so.
But with a different ability. Because we were thinking, because of the insurgent nature of your group, and that we thought that such a character would be useful in the efforts of the resistance. Yeah, because you've got a bower, skinner and trapper. Who are the two hunters?
Well, maybe we only have one hunter.
Scavenger.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I
the gripper, the cat.
I have a scavenger.
He's a bower.
We've got
a couple of scavengers.
We've got two scavengers, a hunter.
And the reason we discuss this is, the reason we need to discuss this and sort this out is the fact that in this game, there is this combined effort that you're putting into building the rebellion and running the rebellion's operations, which is something I'm looking forward to, actually. Now, we've got a couple of options here of what we could do. The book comes with an introductory scenario that focuses potentially on one player. But I thought in order to familiarise ourselves a little bit with the mechanisms of the game, we could try and play out a little vignette. So for now, I could suggest that you are on business at the Dog Tribes, what do they call it? Tribal HQ. I forget what they call it. They've got a name for it. It's like the...
Are they dens?
No, it's like the centre. I don't know if they call it the tribal centre. But that's irrelevant. You've seen it, haven't you? I showed you that picture. That was. It's like a big...
Yeah, they do have quite a specific word for it, don't they?
Yeah, it's an old... It's the outpost, is what they call it in this.
Is it?
Yeah, so the dog's outpost is a place called the Lodge. And the dog tribe is described as the richest and most powerful of tribes in the valley. By running the market by the old ski lodge, they control most of the trade. The tribe is also close to the watchers and is granted generous gifts from them at regular intervals. More and more animals disapprove of the tribe's powerful position. And I think, you know, you're quite aware of that. You're an elder in the tribe. A seer, rank 9. So rank 9 is the highest rank, and that affects when you get involved in confrontation with other members of the tribe or NPCs, other player characters, things like that. So what have you got attributes wise?
So I had 13 attribute points because I'm old, so I get a couple less. But I only have 2 in strength and agility, 4 in wits, and 5 in instinct.
So 5 in instinct, fours and fives is pretty good. You have to have 2 as a minimum, was that right?
Yep.
And it's 5 a maximum. Yeah.
But if it's your
generation.
No, if it's your. Good skill.
Yeah, and that's based on
animal type,
not it's both, isn't it?
Yeah, you get
it's
one,
animal type,
get one
and role.
Type and, yeah, one from type and one from role.
One from type and one from role, and sometimes they're the same, so they overlap. But yours is
mine overlaps. I think it's instinct for dog and seer. I think.
Yeah, that sounds like it could be right. So they live in this old ski lodge building. It's got like a big chain link fence around it, and it's the meeting place and trade, like a trading post. It's got a couple of watchtowers, some big double gates at the front. There's another outbuilding. There's some roll on roll off skips full of scrap. There's a kind of gazebo structure and a couple of market stands. Notably, there's a gallows and a stage set up there with 3 nooses and another building, the adjoining building there. I'm not too sure what that is off the top of my head. It's a 1-story building, wooden building. They're both decayed. Tiles on the roof have come off and several windows are either broken or boarded up, as you can see. Yeah, so in some of the intact windows, functional lighting can be seen, as well as a plethora of knickknacks. At least 100 scavengers from the different tribes engage in trade on the courtyard in front of the buildings. Trailers, car wrecks, containers and tents serve as both stores and warehouses. The market is guarded by armed wolves and foxes who keep watch from 2 simple wooden towers, and the whole facility is surrounded by a long, partly broken wire fence. What do you visualise your character doing when he's at the outpost for the dog tribe at the lodge?
Well, it's got to be in some way related to the rebellion, isn't it?
Well,
wouldn't it, like, most of his...
Well, I don't know, because, you know, if he's an elder of the dog tribe, and he's still trying to maintain, and, you know, I'm imagining, am I right in thinking, he hasn't, like, left the tribe and joined the rebellion, he's kind of, like, undercover. I mean, it's going to be more valuable to the rebellion if he is still maintaining his persona as the seer of the dog tribe, because this suddenly makes him, you know, it means a rebellion has potentially got an insider in the richest and most powerful tribe. That's got to be a good thing for the rebellion, and you would have thought they would have been encouraging him to maintain a... But I mean, it's up to you. You tell me.
Yeah, I suppose. But what does he...
Maybe he's only just...
What do seers do? They're like advisors, aren't they?
Well, he's an elder. So, you know, he's one of the most... The way I see it is he's potentially... Well, he's got good instincts and empathy and stuff like that.
He's got no empathy.
Well, it's instinct in this, because it was empathy, formerly empathy in Mutant Year Zero, and then they just changed that to give it a bit more an animal flavour. Generally, you don't get to a ripe old age if you're foolish, and, you know, especially in a tough environment. This is a really...
Yeah,
this
especially
is a really,
in animals and stuff.
Yeah, this is a really tough place to live, and you've got to imagine that this guy has got some skills, and he'd be recognised for that and respected, and perhaps he's quite well, the way this game works, and because of this sort of like this animalistic structure, it's survival of the fittest and the toughest, and people would make leadership challenges and you would become less dominant, or you'd almost be cast out if you didn't meet these challenges and win these challenges. So somewhere along the line, you're retaining your authority probably through your, well, what, your oracy kind of thing?
Well, the stat they use is dominating it.
Yeah, and that is represented in the game by quite a sort of a show of... It's quite an aggressive show with animal noises and growling and posturing and stuff like that. But obviously, you're not a particularly strong, physically intimidating character. But I guess you've got a reputation and probably supporters. I'm imagining you've got supporters that are the muscle. Like a kind of like a crime boss would have.
Yeah.
They're enforcers. I'm imagining you've got some cronies in the... Well, you definitely would have supporters, wouldn't you, to be in your position. Perhaps this is something that we should play out. Perhaps we should play out a situation where someone is has crossed you. So, dominance conflicts. This would be a dominance conflict. When animal mutants try to force their will upon one another, they don't negotiate and barter like humans do. Instead, the conflict is resolved by snarl, showing of teeth, minor bites and other kinds of behaviour to express dominance or submission. To resolve such a conflict, you use the dominate skill against your opponent's sense emotion. As an opposed role, and that's on page 45. To be able to dominate another animal, you must be within near range and your demand cannot be completely unreasonable. The GM has final word. You can never dominate watchers. Your opponent, your rank and your opponent's rank both affect your dominate role. If your rank is higher, you get a +1 modification for every point of difference. If your rank is lower, you instead get -1 for each point of difference. So the roles in this as well are quite... I feel like they've got a little bit more gravity than in your typical D&D game. Obviously, at times in D&D, you've got die rolls have more importance in the narrative, but quite often you're just kind of like grinding out the die rolls, aren't you? Especially in like something like combat.
It's just a small novice.
But in this, I feel perhaps... The play is a negotiation and a discussion, and the to and fro is what's going to generate this dice pool. So, first of all, let's start thinking. This is going to be happening based on your... Well, what? What do you think?
Well, where my dice pool...
Yeah, no, I want to see how you interpret the rules, interpret the...
Oh, well, I took my 5 in instinct.
Yep.
which is the yellows.
Yeah.
And I took my 3 points in dominate.
So once again, that's quite intuitive. We haven't needed to look that up, but I'm fairly confident to rule that that seems pretty accurate. Let's say for now that there's no complications of additional people. See how that plays out. This is just someone, and we'll get to it, has come to see you on the side. We'll decide whether they've come to see you or you've gone to see them and see who's sort of like initiating this. I think it's going to be you. Let's say it's you. So the minus modifier is the opponent has more people on their side. What you're asking for is valuable or dangerous. Your opponent has nothing to gain by helping you. Your opponent is human or a human mutant. That would give you a minus one. And then there's this thing, groups in social conflicts. When you want to dominate a group of animals, it's normally the group's leader or spokesperson that is the object of your skill role. Remember that you get a minus one modification if he has a larger pack than you. And if you dominate the leader, the other NPCs will generally follow. If there's no clear leader in a group of NPCs, you'll need to dominate them separately. Some gear, most often artifacts, can provide a gear bonus to your attempts to dominate. Do you think you've got any gear that helps assist you in your domination attempt?
Well, I don't die because you don't start off with much gear in the game, do you?
No. And let's go to rank. Yeah, you just get a rank. So let's think about this. So because you're a seer and you're an elder, seer gives you +3, elder gives you 6, so that gives you rank 9. This character is going to be younger, but let's say they're elder, so they're still 6, and I'm going to say they're a warrior, which gives them quite a bit of respect. So this is a potential person. They're a rank 8. This could be a challenger to your position. Alright, so they're 8.
So how's he got to rank 8 then?
Because he's got a cool name like Muttley.
But why is he called the dog's have to be named after physicists, right, per the rules.
Is there not a physicist called Muttley then?
There might be.
Oh well, we'll call him Oppenheimer.
Well, actually, we're not named after. We're named after space people, aren't we?
Space people. I thought it was space people and physicists.
Nah, apes are physicists.
So, as I said, he's risen to prominence because he's got a cool name, and we're going to call him Armstrong. Armstrong.
100. Because he's on my sheet already.
Is he?
Yeah. I hate Armstrong 100.
Really?
Yeah.
That is bizarre.
Well, no, it's space people. The most famous one is Armstrong, but that's why I named it.
Yeah, but for you to put in your character sheet,
session zero, and I said, "Who do I hate? Oh, there'll be some other dog fella that I just hate." And I thought it was like the most generic sounding name ever, and went Armstrong 100.
Oh well, if you'd have reminded me of this, this would have made this whole process a bit simpler and quicker. So, Armstrong 100 is your hate. So, what is it you hate about him? Does it say?
No, because we hadn't properly developed it. So now we're thinking he's a warrior.
Yeah, he's a warrior. Put a note on there that he's rank 8. Armstrong 100. So this is in the relationship section of your character sheet. And this is quite an important aspect to the game.
So how does being an elder warrior work?
Well, he's clearly pretty shrewd and pretty competent. He's just getting a little bit long in the tooth. I imagine he's got a load of sneaky tricks, and what he lacks in physical prowess, he makes up for with sneaky tricks and kind of killer reputation. I reckon he's probably a bit bloodthirsty.
Why would Sirius hate him? Because,
well,
usually he's inclined to prefer the warriors.
Yeah, but
what about him is a...
So the scenario I see playing out in my mind is that he's this very competent warrior who you'd have liked to have had on your side as one of your types, one of your sort of cronies, but he's got ideas of his own, and perhaps you're a little bit jealous of his physical prowess and his sort of power. And I reckon he's got a bit of a following. You know, he's likely to have a bit of a following. And you see him as a bit of a thorn in your side. And you're a little bit envious of him in some ways. But he hasn't got the same sort of people skills and charm that your character no doubt possesses. He's a bit of a silver-tongued... He's not like a wise guy, is he? He's more of... He's just sort of persuasive, isn't he?
Yeah, but I think it's like... I don't know, because like, there's some people that like deliberately try and appease people, and everyone likes them because they try and... But then you get the opposite of you get the guy that just says what everyone wants, and everyone kind of likes him for that.
For his honesty,
yeah.
He's like straight to the point kind of ways. So there's more... I think it's fair to say that there's more than a sprinkling of Winston Churchill in this character. Does he have cigar? He has a cigars in that. Because that's the other thing about a seer. They've got this divination ability, haven't they?
Yep.
Well, how's it described on your sheet?
It is scrying.
Scrying, and it's based on a spur of the moment thing, isn't it?
Well, for my character, it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Other geezers have to like build totems and stuff, but I have sudden visions.
And I like this idea that he has sudden visions when he's got his cigar on, and I do like the idea that he almost sees pictures in the smoke. Images in the smoke. I don't know what he's smoking, but whatever it is, these sort of images appear, or they seem to appear, like looking at, you know, like looking at the
clouds.
Well,
nobody else can see him, can they? But he sort of certain shapes, doesn't he?
Yeah. I'm going to say that you was having one of your typical cigars, one of your favourites that you've scavenged from somewhere, left, you know, no one's really too sure. I'm not so sure that you're understanding, because unless they're being produced, there is a chance.
Well, there's loads of tobacco products in that book.
Yeah, but I think they're being produced by herbalists at this stage.
Yeah, I think so.
Because that's a skill, and there's maybe access to tobacco plants grown in undercover in greenhouses and stuff like that. So I think that they're maybe being produced, but perhaps you. I mean, that idea's come from somewhere, hasn't it? So, someone's researched it, and maybe you've got hold of a stash of
got books and stuff, don't I? So.
Yeah. Ancient, or maybe these are gifts that have come, because it said that the dogs are the most powerful, and maybe this is almost a symbol of your authority, the fact that you can kind of...
Yeah, I think like, you'd have to be quite a high-ranking...
Swagger
around
with a cigar.
Because you've got a lot like the scummy fellas with like their...
Homebrew,
yeah.
Roll-ups.
But he's got proper Cuban cigars.
He's like some ancient, like antique Havana
What's the
cigars.
Brand I've made it? Romeo and Julieta.
Is that a legit brand?
Yeah, I researched what one cigar Churchill smoked.
This is for your art project at school. So he's an elder warrior, and he's got some following. And I reckon you've seen a vision that he's been getting up to no good. He's helped himself to some supplies. I don't know if he's out and out stolen your cigars. I feel like that'd be a bit too much. It's not as outrageous as that. He's somehow accessed, without authorization, accessed some tribal supplies and given preference to his cronies. And you've got a vision that this has been going on, and you've spoken to, like, your assistant, some kind of clerical guy, a quartermaster or something like that. Who do you visualise might be, what sort of a character might be doing that job for you?
Well, I do have an assistant.
Oh.
But, I have a hare.
Oh, right.
Called Pele 45. That's more in the resistance.
Oh.
That's more of a resistance person. But in the dog tribe, I imagine I get on quite well with like the supplies manager, and I go see him and he sorts me out with my little box of cigars.
Okay, so what might...
Because I imagine he has to like section them aside from like the tribe thing, so nobody walks off with my gear.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it'd probably give you the nod if any of that sort of stuff comes in and you kind of like got your name down for it and see it as a privilege of rank. Plus, I guess you'd be sort of kind of addicted to smoking and tobacco, so you'd be almost reliant on it to a certain extent. Otherwise, maybe what happens when you don't get your cigars? You get like grumpy and stuff.
Yeah, well, it also probably affects his divination abilities.
Oh right, yeah, of course. Does it maybe not work so well with others?
Well, it probably wouldn't actually affect his things, but he thinks it does. So therefore, it kind of does.
Well, that's a distraction. If he's thinking that, it's maybe going to prevent his.
But if he thinks it affects his abilities, then obviously it would.
Well, it's like a placebo, isn't it? Do you have a reverse placebo effect, where the negative thought brings about a negative consequence as opposed to the positive?
There is probably quite a cool word for it. But I don't
I feel like there is. So how do you see this playing out? Are you going to go and like? Well, we've said you're quite openly. You're quite upfront and
confrontational.
Are you confrontational? Would you be confrontational with Armstrong 100?
Yeah.
Well, at this point, you've got to be, I guess.
Yeah. So what's he? He's like meddled with the tribe supplies.
Yeah. You've had your suspicions, and then you've sat there. You're in your. Where do you got like a study? Where
I have one of them rooms. I'd imagine in the lodge.
You have a room in a lodge, it's your, like,
yeah,
your
office.
Yeah,
I have all my papers with my speeches written down.
Uh-huh.
And it's got a constant sort of smell of cigar smoke.
Yeah, and probably a sort of a cigar haze.
And because the window's been, like, boarded up, it don't really get out the window, so it's all just in his room.
Oh, yeah, so the ventilation, you can't really ventilate it. And have you got, like, does he get sort of old artefacts? Has he got a taste for the traditional? Has he almost got that sort of...
Yeah, he tries, but I imagine it's quite hard.
I would think so. I would think it is quite difficult, especially with it being an old sort of like ski lodge, nature reserve type of place. It's not like you're in a city with old government buildings.
Yeah, and I suppose he tries to have some books as well, but I don't think they're easy to come by either.
No, they're probably more in the style of like lighter reading and the sort of things that people maybe get involved in when they're on holiday. And
yeah, so he tries to have a couple of books if he sees anything that seems sort of remotely intellectual.
Okay, so he's got almost like a study come office, and he's sat there, he's having his smoke, and he gets this flash of divination. And I think this is going on down in the basement, because the basement would be quite secure, could keep it locked up. So you head on down to the basement, and sure enough, old Armstrong 100 is down there having a rummage around. But he hasn't got any of his typical cronies, and you've come quite spontaneously. I think you was perhaps coming to actually check the stores, maybe following up some irregularities. Yeah, some irregularities in the records that... what was the name of your... Did we come up with a name for your...
Oh, no.
Your logistics manager or whatever is the quartermaster type character?
So he's a dog, so it's sort of space-related.
Yeah.
So... Well, there's obviously ones like Gagarin and... But
well, we can come back to that. We'll find a suitable name for this quartermaster character. I'm not really up on my astronauts. You want some sort of like some sort of loyal. Anyway, I know it's only a small part of this game, but it's quite interesting. It's quite an interesting aspect of the game that they didn't need to have in there, but it could sort of like springboard off into all sorts of little things. You could do a wiki search on some of these characters, and the story of the real person that they're named after could prove as decent inspiration.
I mean, I put quite a lot of thought into my names.
Yeah,
I ended up with Tyson, but it weren't that obvious because I couldn't name him after a boxer. But I still wanted his name to be Tyson, because I knew a scientist called Tyson.
Yeah.
And then I could have Tyson because it sort of fits his character. But I also haven't just broken the scientist name.
Yeah, so there's a sort of an element of creativity in just the naming that I find, you know, reflecting on that and actually in play, it's just another dimension that I've not really seen before. Because I quite like the idea of building characters based on an image or a concept, like you do, well, like it's advised in ICRPG. And this is just a bit different, an interesting wrinkle. Anyway, so our man, the quartermaster, he's found, he's done a stock take, and it don't add up. There's some, like this kind of beef jerky stuff that everybody likes, and it's a favourite, this like chewy beef, sun-dried. I don't even know if beef would be it. Maybe like a reindeer, like they have in Norway, like a dried reindeer product, and it's a quite a good snack because you can carry it and travel with it and go out and about, and it's down. There's missing. It can't be accounted for. You've come down and there's Armstrong, and he's like rooting through this old cooler chest, like the cool box that we take picnic in. There's like a cool box, there's various cool boxes and crates and things like this that's been scavenged, sort of throwbacks to the past. And he's got the lid off of one and he's sort of rooting about. And you can hear him snuffling and sniffling and rummaging. And he's even got a packet of this stuff open. And as he's rooting through, he's like scranning it. And he seems unaware of your approach. Now, my dog lore is not awesome, but I feel like he is. What do you think? I'm thinking like typically in this game, this is about you creating the stuff. So I could easily offer something, and I will. But I think it should be like a negotiation where we build the scene. And I'm thinking like a Doberman or a German Shepherd type of looking thing. But
He should be one of the, because he's a warrior.
Yeah.
So he's got to be one of the big powerful dogs, but maybe not one of like. Maybe, because they're quite lanky, aren't they?
And that's big, what I'm thinking,
they've got the big shifty-looking ears, aren't they?
I'm thinking, like the Doberman, have got that little bit of a jowly look, haven't they? Got a sort of a kind of jowly thing going on, I'm not sure. But, and the ears, I imagine these ears.
They're the ones with the super tall ears, aren't they, the Doberman?
Yeah, I think so. Are we thinking that, then? They've got quite a prominent, they've got quite a powerful-looking jaw on them, and back in the 70s and 80s, I don't know if it's still a thing, but my recollection as a kid, the Doberman was the guard dog that was forever turning up in films and things. Oh yeah, I think it's quite imposing looking. What do you think about that? Oh yeah, what do you reckon?
I think he could be one of them.
Yeah.
I think that's...
Yeah.
Because I'm a pit bull, ain't I?
Yeah.
No, I'm a bulldog.
Oh, yeah, of course you are, yeah. Of course you are. Hence the Churchill thing.
Yeah.
So let's say he's like this Doberman style of dog-like.
Yeah, I don't know why it's a pit
bull. I quite like the colouring of that, so it's got this dark, blacky, chestnut.
Yeah, I think they're usually dark colours,
isn't it? Yeah, dark-looking, chestnutty brown, kind of maybe yellow, quite piercing yellow eyes. Although he's still got his back to you at this point. And I was thinking he might be a bit of a hockey player, hockey enthusiast. So he's got like I don't really know. I reckon they could. I mean, there's no reason why there couldn't be. There'd probably be the hockey equipment. Quite often in the setting, it's described that they use hockey armour, hockey armour as a thing. So although he ain't got his hockey armour on today, I think, you know, he's... It's quite early in the morning and he's come down here peckish and he's just thrown on he's just got like a hockey shirt. We need to get some inspiration for some hockey from some hockey. I'll speak to my Canadian buddies and I'll put something on the Discord and see if I can get some good teams.
I think it is meant to be. I think hockey is a thing because you're meant to name, like, I had to name my character after a winter sports.
Yeah, winter sports, athlete. A winter sports star. And we were thinking skiing and that, and then Gretzky is the hockey player. So, yeah, so this is another thing, see, I like you know, I just like this tie-in with the... You can dig into some like real world stuff and bring it into your game, but it's not in the now, it's the past. And they could have like, you know, they could have like really idolised this game. I mean, hockey fans and sports fans get quite fanatical, but maybe the dogs and that are quite fanatical about their ice hockey, and perhaps he's pretty good at it. So maybe he's got quite good agility, and you know, he's a tough guy, he's a warrior, and you know, that the ice hockey, I mean, most professional sports get pretty rough, but ice hockey's known for being quite, yeah, it's not a game for the faint-hearted, shall we say. And that's a bit of an understatement. So he's got this shirt, and he's scanning his food. He's probably got like a pair of like baggy old Bermuda shorts or something like that. A bit of a classic mismatch. I don't think he's got good dress sense. Clip. And you probably mock him for that as well. It's like not properly turned out. He's just got some baggy old clothes, but he thinks they look cool. He likes the bright colours and the Gary style.
Shambolic.
The garishness, yeah. So what you're doing is there, you're basically caught in red-handed. And to be right, this is locked. This is kept under lock and key, this place. So this is a bit of breaking an entry, or you straight away thinking, how's he getting in? So there's quite a few questions
so
in
how
your
did
mind,
I
is
get
it? Well, you've come down thinking you're going to check this, and yeah, you're pretty surprised, like I say, to find him in here. He's got in, you don't know how he's got
in. I imagine I've had to have a word with someone and be like, oh yeah, I need to have a check on the supplies.
Well, that's your man.
And I've had to speak with a quartermaster to get in here, and I...
If he literally keeps a key, and yeah, probably you don't want to bother with that because people will keep coming to you every time they needed something. So yeah, he's reported to you, and yeah, so let's say you've got to see him, and he said, oh yeah, well, let yourself in, let me know what you think. What was you thinking? What would help you by actually coming and making a physical check of the place?
Well, I've seen that he's doing this, haven't I?
Well, you've seen a suspicious amount of, like... Well, perhaps this is what's alerted you.
No, but
well,
I used my divination.
Oh, yeah, you've seen it. Yeah, you've seen it.
He's up to this antics.
That's right, yeah. But you didn't... Obviously, the divination doesn't tell you perhaps exactly when it's going to happen and that. So, well, what do you think the divination looked like? What did you see? We've just said that you got wind of it. But
well,
I think
I would have been thinking about the incongruencies in the stock, and its incorrectness, and that doesn't add up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've been brooding on it.
Yeah.
I've lit up a cigar.
Yeah.
And in the smoke, a familiar face has appeared. Oh.
With pointy ears.
Yeah.
Big ears, and yeah, a familiar face. Yeah.
And I've marched down to the quartermaster's abode.
Yeah.
And I think I haven't, because this is the trick. You can't, because my divinations, I believe, can be wrong.
Right.
So if I just say, because I've noticed, and I don't want to say I've got him.
Yeah.
Because then I could be wrong.
No, you need evidence.
But if I just pretend, oh look, this don't add up, I need to go take a look.
Yeah.
And then I get him, then I look like I was right. There's no risk of me being wrong.
Yeah. No, you need evidence. You can't just go accusing him, because it's quite serious.
Correct.
Yeah, it's quite serious. But now it's. And I'm imagining maybe your divination is better when there's more appropriate stuff around in your surroundings. So like maybe by going down to the actual place, almost like the scene of a crime, or perhaps when you've got physical evidence and that, it makes your divination stronger. So maybe by being in that area, perhaps you're hoping that more visions will come. Do you know what I mean?
Maybe.
Yeah.
But I also do need to have a look at it anyway, I suppose.
Yeah, well, you want to... Okay, so you want to get this in your mind, that you're happy in your mind that this is just not a miss. You can check the guy's counting as well, because maybe you could have counted it wrong. You know, so you want to make a physical check anyway, because you don't know how... He's got a good reputation, the quartermaster, but he could have made a simple mistake, and you don't want egg on your face. You're too old, too wise to fall for that kind of knee-jerk reaction. You're quite methodical, you're going down there, but things take a turn now, because this has got more serious suddenly, because it's not just him sneaking around, but he's actually got in here, and you weren't expecting it to see him in here. You thought maybe there was some bribery, or maybe the quartermaster was a bit dodgy, so perhaps that's why, you know, you've got a little nagging doubt in your mind. Perhaps the quartermaster's in on it. Because that's the thing, when you're at the top, you know, everybody's out to get you. And maybe that gives us some sort of lead into the resistance. Like I say, back to the action then. So you've come down, there he is, scranning. What are you going to do now?
I think I'll throw subtlety out of the window, and I'll shout, "Officer, what in the blazes are you doing? Meddling with the supply caught you red-handed."
Well. What do you know? Old Sirius poking around. Well, Sirius, what can I say? Me and the boys were a little bit peckish.
Peckish?
Well, all the work we do keeping this place secure, you old boys.
This is blatant misuse of the tribal supplies. By law, I could have you hung.
Maybe you could, if you had some witnesses. But seems to me that you don't.
My word counts for more than yours, Armstrong.
Is that a fact?
The leader of the tribe will see fit that my will is done.
Well, I'm not so sure about that.
Quartermaster! Quartermaster!
Now listen, Sirius, don't be silly. Don't be silly. I think you should maybe just get out of my way, and I'll take this box here with me for my trouble. I'll hand it out to the boys, we'll keep it quiet, and I'll carry on looking after the tribe. As you know I do, I've got just as much sway in this tribe.
If you think I'll let you leave unjustified, you are very much mistaken.
Right, so what at this point are you asking him to do? Because for this to be a dominate role, at the moment, he's not really trying to dominate you. He is just going to sidestep you. He's telling you what he's going to do, and he don't really need your permission, because physically, I don't think he sees you as much of an issue. You're going to have to dominate him. What do you want him to do? Well, I'm struggling.
I would like him to unhand that box.
Basically, put it back on the shelf. Okay, that's going to take some persuading, because each, what they call it, attribute, each attribute has got three associated skills. So, yes. Dominate is a instinct skill, and a dominance conflict. So, his sense of motion, your domination. So what is your...
Oh, is that how you... Is that the opposed check, sense of motion?
Yeah, so you...
Do you not oppose domination with domination?
No. Oh. No, you use sense of motion. So some checks you do like for like. Oh, in this right. case, so... What I'm going to do, so for the learning purposes, obviously, when you're playing this, you wouldn't keep referring to this like this. So, dominate instinct. So, lies, flattery, and manipulation were humankind's ways of making others obey. Animals have another way of breaking down resistance, an animal conflict of rank and dominance. Roll dominate when you want to make an NPC act according to your wishes. This is an opposed roll where you roll dominate and your opponent rolls sense of motion. Your demand must be reasonable according to the GM's ruling, and the GM may also give you a modification dependent on your rank. You can never dominate watchers. And then failure, we look at, and success. Well, so failure, he won't listen and he won't do what you want. He might start to dislike you or even attack you if provoked. Success, he must choose to either do what you want or immediately attack you in close combat. Oof. And then when you get extra successes, so six is on your roll, you sow fear and doubt in your opponent's heart, extra successes. And they suffer 1 point of doubt for every additional success you roll after the first one. And if they're broken by doubt, they do what you want without getting the option to fight you. So if you're really successful, you can break someone with the doubt and they don't get the option. So what have we got then? We worked out you got
eight dice.
And I believe I get some sort of bonus for being higher rank.
Yeah, so we look at the thing. So the bonuses, and you only work this out for the PC, so you don't need to like work out bonuses and penalties because they're like opposites. So you get a negative if what you ask for is valuable or dangerous. Your opponent has nothing to gain by helping you. I'm not going to impose you a minus.
Well, no, because I'm threatening that he's going to get caught, isn't he?
Yeah, it's not.
I'm not just asking him to do it out of the kindness of his heart.
No. And it's not his loss. So it does say you'd get a plus one modification to your dominate if what you ask for doesn't cost your opponent anything. Well, saying it does, yeah.
Because he's getting less food, isn't he?
Yeah, he's getting less food, and this is for his hoppo, so...
I thought I got off...
He's not suffered trauma. You haven't helped your opponent earlier, and you haven't got more food. So I'm not giving you a bonus there, but... He's rank 8, you're rank 9, so you've already got one success.
Uh-huh.
So you've got that to your advantage. So that's your dice pool. Got no gear dice that are coming in here. So now we've just got to work out his sense of motion. Now, I'm going to say his instinct is probably pretty good. But with his strength and agility and everything else being good...
It can't be that good.
It's not that great. It's not that great. It's not in the way of yours. So I'm going to say that's a 3.
Right.
I'm going to say that's a 3. That's how he's got to this age that he has. Sense, emotion. Well, he's going to have at least one skill in that.
Yeah, one or two probably.
And then what we'll do, we're 50-50 whether he's got another one. So low he hasn't, high he has. No. So he is not that skillful. This is not... So
experience.
Yeah, no, he strong arm tactics are his thing.
Yeah.
This is not his thing. So there you go. We've built up a bit of a story from his dice pool, and by reasoning, we've been able to come up with a little bit of a character on the fly. Because I've basically generated that character on the fly for the purposes of this, haven't I?
Yep.
So that's quite good. I like that. That and it all makes sense. So How do you want to do it? Should I roll first, or do you want to roll?
Is there a way it particularly works in the rules, or
no?
Well, no. This seems like sense emotion seems like a defence against dominate. So dominate should probably go first.
Yeah, let's do that then.
Oh, I can barely reach the bloody stuff with my fast.
So with our Ferrero Rocher.
So that's no successes, is it? Because it's no sixes.
But you've got one, and this is the classic Mutant Year Zero criticism. Even with all the dice, quite often it's quite hard to get sixes. So
that'd be quite a good rolling coach, wouldn't
it? 8 dice
has resulted in what, 3 5s?
Yeah, now there's actually a table. So whilst we're at it, let's have a look at that table, because
it doesn't look like a terrible roll.
It looks like, look, 8 dice, yeah, you're going to say, well, that's pretty good. Oh yeah, here it is. So what do we say? 8 dice. So 77% chance of success, of at least one success.
Yeah. So it's not a good roll.
That's not a good roll.
What odds has he got against it?
He's got 4, so he's on a 52. He's on a 52, but then there's a pushed roll. Right, sometimes it's not enough to roll a success to succeed at a skill roll. In certain cases, you need to overcome your opponent in an opposed roll. To win an opposed roll, you need to make your roll and roll more than your opponent does. Every success rolled by your opponent negates a success rolled by you. Only you, the aggressor, can push the roll. Opposed rolls are used in dominance conflicts and in sneaking. So the thing is, you've basically got one success at the moment.
But I'm always going to have one success.
Well, because of your rank.
Yeah, but there's...
But did you think... So what I'm not sure... What I'm not
pushing work?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering about the pushing. Now, you have to keep them rolls.
Yeah.
Because on a push... Was that a 1?
Yeah.
That can go pear-shaped, that 1. I believe. Anyway, so... Do you think... you do the normal roll, and then the player gets a decision on whether to push their roll or not after. See, I don't think...
Well, you don't want to push before you've failed.
No, I think
you have to push before you know what they've done, maybe.
No.
Do you get a crap roll and then push, or do you get
a
roll and then lose?
That's what I want to figure out, and that's why I want to do this. Right, so if you're desperate to succeed and refuse to give up, you can push your roll. That means you grab all the dice that didn't come up with a 1 or a 6 and roll them again. You get a new shot at rolling successes. You can never push dice that show 1s. They stay as they were on the table, and you cannot choose which specific dice to roll again. When you push, you have to roll them all. Usually, you would only push a roll if you failed, although you can push a roll even if you did get it in your first roll in order to get more than to perform
something. You get to know if you failed or not, I believe.
Pushing a roll is not without risk. How a push roll plays out in story terms depends on what skill you're using. It can take the form of great physical exertion, total mental focus or emotional strain. If you push a roll, you must also push any gear dice, and you can only push your roll once. If you don't succeed on your second try, you are done for. All you can do is take the hit and suffer the consequences. When you push yourself this hard, there is a risk that you will release the beast within. And when you push a roll, you get 1 feral point for every 1 you've rolled. All feral points count, even the ones in your first roll before you re-roll. You need feral points to activate your animal powers, and feral points correspond to mutation points in Mutant Zero.
And what's the downside of that?
Yeah, when you push yourself to the limits, your body or mind can be exhausted. If you roll a 1 when pushing a roll, you also suffer trauma to the attribute used in your roll. You suffer an equal number of trauma points as the number of feral points you gain. That is 1 for everything you have rolled. So you will get that 1 would be straight away, plus any more that you roll.
So I could end up with a lot of animal points and trauma points. Where do you mark trauma points?
That's a good question. You mark trauma on the ability that it is. So it's your instinct in this
case. And
that
makes me worse at that.
Makes you worse at that,
and
yeah.
That recovers...
That doubt recovers with... Is it sleep, or you have... depending on your animal type, there's something you have to do. There's like a behaviour that you do.
Also, query...
I think that's right. We'll check that.
But you take damage to your stat, and you gain the same.
Animal points.
So the animal points aren't bad necessarily.
No, this.
There's pros and cons.
It's so that even when you're having a bad day, it's like the silver lining. It's sort of something that you get in other systems when you.
But do you get that anyway for rolling a 1?
So when you fail. It's a bit anticlimactic, but at least you get, at least you get this, or at least you get that. And I've seen that in other games. I can't remember which ones offhand. But
I do get to know whether I succeeded or failed.
That seems right, because...
Getting advantage before you've known what you're doing, and it's just like, well, I'll use my inspiration. Oh, well, I didn't need it.
It's rubbish. Not too many folks seem to like the way it's written originally. Right, so let's roll this. It seems to me the right thing to do.
Whoa.
Whoa. Wow. So, okay. Now.
Only 1 6, though.
He's got a success.
What happens in the case of a draw?
Because they're not going to do what you want, because you haven't convinced them. So you've got to convince them, haven't you?
It does seem like the defenders in some way sort of win, don't they?
I mean, I think the obvious thing is that you would push the roll.
Because then I'd get 7 more dice.
Well, because why wouldn't you? You want him to put the damn thing back.
So I leave that 1 out. So I'm getting minimum of 1 damage to instinct and 1 feral point.
So what are you doing now? Because I feel like we can figure this out. But
well, I feel like in the case of the draw, the exchange sort of draws out, doesn't it, a bit?
Have you, like, got your hand on the box something like that?
I think he's getting a bit worked up now. Because he was a bit worked up before.
He's snarling. You put your hand on the box and he's snarling.
Yeah, he's going to get docked, mate. There's no way I'm rolling...
See, don't you think there's quite a sense of drama to
these rolls?
There's
no way I'm rolling 15 dice without getting a 6. That ain't happening.
Bosh. Ah, there you go.
There's another
Always
one.
Another
There's
one
two. Have it. Oh, a bunch of ones, though. Oh, dear. Took some hits there, flipping it out.
So does that actually, they kick in. They still kick in, don't they?
Yeah, so I ended up with 3 sixes, 4 ones. Well, no, I didn't roll 3 sixes, but I got a bonus six, didn't I?
Yeah, you've got
I've ended up with 3 against 1, but I've got 4 ones. So my instinct is almost kaput.
Yeah, that's like really drained you down. And and I'm going to say that's enough. The stakes are too... I think you've shaken him a little bit there, weren't it? He weren't expecting you to kind of like actually physically intervene with maybe like your walking stick on the top of the box, or you've like tapped it and snarled at him or something. What have you done? What have you tell? I don't know. This is the old DMing coming through. But in these games, you've got to take a bit of a lighter touch. So what is it that's happened that has tipped him over the edge? You see the fight's gone out of him. Your sense of motion, and with that role, you've pushed it now. You can see the fight's gone out of him. What's occurred?
Well, I came into the exchange shouting. And then in my attempt to dominate him, I got very close, shouting in his face. And you know, dogs have all that drool going on.
Yeah.
I imagine a bit of that sending up on his face.
Flying out.
My cigar's been a bit in his face, and my walking stick's on the box, shouting at him.
So you got quite animated.
Yeah, he's got very, very animated. And
what sort of stuff would he be saying to him?
Oh, you know.
He's like, look, you can't tell me what to do, old man.
I don't know, I think he'd be very... I don't know if he would be insulting? I don't know if he's much of an insulting character. No, I think he's a very just overwhelmingly aggressive presence. And he'll be shouting like, you'll leave the blasted box on that shelf if it's the last thing that he's done in this here basement.
And he kind of just turns. And he hunches over a bit and he slides it back on. And he's like, well, Sirius, you might have got your way this time. But you better sleep with one eye open. That's all I've got to say to you.
And okay, leave you doing some sleeping after this exchange.
And with that, he just kind of sidles out and he just glances over his shoulder and he's got like a snarly, his lip is curled up and he's just kind of grumbling and growling and
this box has been on this shelf for 1,000 years.
So with 2 points on his... So you beat him by 2 points. You could have like actually inflicted...
And I would. I would like to.
Yeah, you'd have put 2 points of doubt into
it. Well, because I sort of have to, because it saves me from combat, doesn't it?
If you'd have done 3, he'd have been broken, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Because we said he had 3 empathy. So he would take them... He would have taken those... The additional 2 would have been... I think that's significant. Like 2/3 of his total amount of instinct is gone in that one exchange. If you think about it, that's like...
Is that what I do? I can instill damage on him.
Yeah, you instill doubt, so...
The level I beat him by is doubt, is it?
Yeah.
But if I beat him by 1, do I get 1 doubt? Or do you have to beat him by 2 to...
That's what I weren't sure about. That's what I weren't sure about, whether you count.
I mean, I took loads of damage to my dad doing that bloody ones.
Well, let's have a look. When you successfully dominate someone, so these are the effects. When you successfully dominate them, as we said, they've got this choice. They either bow to your will or immediately attack you. I can't see how that'd be a really good idea for him here anyway, because he doesn't lose any face. There doesn't seem to be much point. It'll just look very suspicious if you turned up beaten up in this thing and... it looked really bad for him. However, extra successes on your roll mean you sow fear in your opponent's heart. He suffers 1 point of doubt for every additional you roll over the first one. Yeah, so he would get 2 doubt. I mean, that's, in this circumstance, I think that's pretty significant. So doubt is, it's in the game, it's trauma. There are 4 types of trauma in the game. Each type will decrease one of your 4 attributes. So you indicate trauma that you suffer by using the checkboxes on your character sheet. And doubt is a lack of confidence, distrust, disappointment and sadness, and you decrease your instinct. Damage is bruises, bleeding, wounds and broken bones. You decrease your strength. And fatigue, physical exhaustion, sweating and panting. You decrease your agility. And confusion is lack of clarity, bewilderment and misjudgment. Decreases your wits. So when your score hits zero, you're broken. So if you'd have done one more, he would have been broken. You'd have had enough.
I've done one more.
And lack the will or ability to keep going. Exactly what it means to be broken depends on the attribute that's been depleted. So when you break for instincts, it's you break down in fear, self-pity or sorrow. So I think he would have been fearing, you know, retributions or fear of getting caught out and being seen as weaker, something like that. And when you're broken, you cannot use any skills, perform actions or activate animal powers. You can, however, perform one maneuver per turn. The fastest way to recover from being broken is for someone else to successfully heal you. In most cases, though, you don't need to be healed to get back on your feet, as long as you're not dehydrated, starving or hypothermic. You recover after D6 hours, even if no one heals you. You get 1 point in the relevant attribute score back and you can keep going. Once back on your feet, you can recover the rest of your trauma with the help of resources.
So I took 3 damage.
And then there's rules for all that.
Should I carry these effects over to...
So, go on, sorry.
When we start playing. Because I've taken 3 damage to my doubt there.
No, I think there'd be time, because it's for... So you need to express an animal behaviour, which one depends on your animal type, and that restores all lost instinct. You need resources to recover. So to recover trauma and restore lost attribute points, 2 things are needed. At least 4 hours rest, and a resource depending on the type of trauma. When both conditions are met, you restore lost attributes points of the relevant type. You can recover multiple types of trauma simultaneously, as long as you have access to the resources. Yeah, so the resources, you have to be your animal self, basically, and you need time. The whole idea of playing this was so that we could do some more like pickup sessions, and we've just, for an example, this is an example of a little scene you can play out. It's taken us roughly what?
Well, the scene hasn't taken us very long.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the sort of thing, you could sit and play a little hour long vignette of something or other and do something meaningful in game terms. But character advancement, it's this thing where you ask questions. Did you participate in the session? Well, it's not a session. Not lying. Did you sacrifice or risk something for your tribe? Potentially. Did you sacrifice or risk something for your buddy? Did you sacrifice or risk something for the NPC you wanted to keep safe? Did you sacrifice or risk something to mess with the NPC you hate?
I've done 2 there, really. I've messed with the one I hate, yeah. And I've sacrificed my own health and instinct for the tribe's food that was being misadjudicated.
Yeah. Yeah, basically. Yeah, well, Mark 2 XP, I'm happy enough with that.
Excellent.
I wouldn't give you the extra session bonus because I feel that's a bit too easy for a little pickup like that. Right, your rank in the tribe can be affected by your actions. During the debriefing, this is where, so we have a debriefing and we talk about, you know, what went on. Have you defeated another animal with a higher rank than you in a dominance conflict? Oh, have you risked your life to help your tribe? If you can answer yes to one or more of the below questions, your ranking steadily increases.
My rank can't even increase though, can it?
No, but you could have lost face.
Oh, can you lose rank?
Yeah.
How do you lose rank?
Have you been defeated by another animal with a lower rank than you in a dominant?
Ooh, that was a conflict? Close shave.
Have you failed your tribe in some way? Well, that was quite a crux thing. Arguable, because... I don't think I'd have enforced that straight away because it would have to come to light.
No, yeah.
But I think I would have ran.
Be like this bloke, so probably.
I would have randomised, and it could have led into something else. But basically,
but
yeah.
I dealt with him.
So this is what I wanted to get across. That role is important.
It's quite important.
Yeah, because that was not just a kind of chuck away role. It was a dominance challenge.
Yes.
So do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know.
It's good. It's good.
It is pretty good. So there you go. There's our first little taster of Mutant Year Zero and Gen Lab Alpha. I quite like it. I like well, what do you think? I've done a lot of talking, as I'm wont to do.
I think it's pretty good.
I do quite like it. It's quite good. It is. I like how rank works. I think it's quite good.
I think it's
interesting how it like easy it is because you have a lot of stuff that wasn't that hard to come up with on your character sheet.
Yeah.
That can all sort of come in and
come into it. Yeah.
Because I mean, I already have like a person I hate on here. Yeah. So when you're like, oh, you're having this confrontation, well, I have a person here. So as I was saying, I enjoy how there's a lot of elements that aren't. Impossibly difficult to come up with on a character sheet that can all sort of tie in with your rank. I like how rank affects dominance roles. And I like how there's a system to track your relation. I don't know if I have it on this bit. Oh, I do. I like that there's a system to track your relationship with the other player characters and NPCs.
Yeah.
Particularly, you know, the NPCs, you know, you have the I hate the NPC and you have some space to write a bit about them.
Yeah, and in the... In the debriefing, you get a chance to reflect on your relationships. I mean, I think it's pretty clear that your relationship with Armstrong 100 has not improved any. But you could, if you wanted to, you could take on a new person as the focus of your hatred, as it were. I think you've just kind of reinforced it for Armstrong now. But you can note that. And I agree with you. I think some of the things that you're saying on the character sheet there, that when you first sort of see it, you can pass over it and not fully appreciate the significance. Yet when you play, oh yeah, suddenly rank makes a bit more sense. And like, oh yeah, you know, there's some important ramifications that immediately tie into the narrative and generate more narrative, you know, straight away. He's rank 8, you're rank 9. Well, that tells a tale in its own right, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's good. The rank system is good. And even on the back of my character sheet, people I've met, I can already add the quartermaster fella.
Yeah, well, you need
once
to do
come
that.
Up a name for him.
Yeah.
And what role would I put him under? I suppose he's a scavenger, maybe.
Yeah, it's every likelihood. That's
sensible. His hoard and stuff.
He's like a scavenger that's risen through the ranks. He's become quite competent at managing all the scavenging. He's probably probably a very obvious or high profile presence in the market. You know, you probably often find him seeing what's coming in, and he's probably got authority to trade with some of the other tribes and get good deals, and he can probably negotiate favourable terms with the people that are trading there, you know. Make sure he gets your cigars, like we know he's got his eye out for cigars. He's probably, like, you're probably quite well known for it, so people come to the dog tribe when they've got cigars, and all of that has just come about basically from sort of the way the character sheet's been designed and some of these little ideas from the designer. So it's interesting. And like I say, and I've said many times, you don't get the nuances of a game until you get it to the table, even on a sort of a relatively superficial level like today. Well, awesome. Well, thanks for joining us, Sonny. I will wrap it up there. And we will catch you in the future with some further exploits of the dog tribe, of Sirius. See what Armstrong gets up to, all in the not so aptly named Paradise Park.
Valley.
Valley. And cut.
And that, as they say, is a wrap. Big thanks goes out to you, the listener, for taking a bit of time out of your day to listen to old Spike Pit. Take care, and I'll catch you later.